Support this podcast via our Patreon and get more writerly goodness. Visit patreon.com/nanocast to join up.
Welcome to The Everyday Novelist. My name is J. Daniel Sawyer. I'm the author of some 27 books, 34 short stories, and numerous articles and scripts and essays, and I am your guide on this journey to raise your productivity to pulp speed levels and to explore the cracks and crevices of business and craft in the writing life.
Welcome to The Questions, episode 609.
Today, Robert asks,
I am recognizing that one weakness in my writing is that I don't always flesh out side characters enough to breathe their own life into them. I was thinking that a good way to stretch myself is to write a heist story, given how they rely on different characters with different motivations. Can you go through what makes a heist movie a heist movie? How do different character motivations and skill sets impact the story? Do you have any suggestions on movies or books that would be worth studying?
Well, the thing that makes a heist story a heist story is the heist. What you're actually talking about, I think, is a caper, which is not exactly the same as a heist. A heist does not have to be a caper, but a caper is almost always a heist. A caper involves a logistically difficult, maybe impossible-seeming theft of some kind of very valuable MacGuffin for reasons that are sympathetic to the audience. It doesn't have to be to get the money. It could be, like in the Thomas Crown Affair, the remake, it could be because the main character is rich and bored and likes to cause mischief. You know, we'd all like to be rich and bored, and we all like to cause mischief, so he's a really sympathetic guy, even though he's basically making everybody's life a living hell as he does it. As the working-class police officer points out, he wants to be out on the street busting real criminals instead of worrying about some guy that's stealing swirls of paint that only matter to very silly rich people. So, you know, there's every reason to think that this guy is a jerk, but we like him because he's basically fucking with people. And a lot of us just enjoy fucking with people. There's a delight in the sort of school-age prankster spirit. So much so that, you know, the coyote in the in several Native American traditions, or Loki in Viking traditions, or Mercury in the Greek traditions, the spirit of mischief is so prominent in the human soul that almost every culture that bothers to have a religion has a god of mischief. Back before Satan was a bad guy, he was God's angel of mischief, which you can see in the book of Job, for example. So a defining characteristic of a caper is the spirit of mischief. It's the chaos demon that we all sort of wish we could unleash, but in harmless ways. Beyond that, a caper film usually involves a set of relationships that are most similar to the kinds of relationships that are formed between war buddies. The characters involved in the heist are highly interdependent, but very independent. They each have their own thing that they bring to the table, and by teaming up, they become more than the sum of their parts. So they need each other, but not in a way that they emotionally need each other to be completed, but in more of a way that happens in the military, where by joining forces and specializations, you suddenly get something way more powerful and fun and that does great explodey things. Now, when you take one step further, a lot of caper films and caper stories are following in that spirit, are what Gail and I were talking about a few episodes ago in The Heroine's Journey, and you can push that really far. Another element that is usually but not always present is a romance. And if it's not a romance, you'll have a deep friendship at the center of it, or a deep rivalry, or sometimes all three. In the Thomas Crown Affair, the remake, the insurance investigator and the criminal become romantically involved and fall deeply in love with each other, even as they're trying to completely screw each other's worlds up. It's a fantastically fun dynamic. In the remake of The Italian Job, you have a romance and a deep rivalry at the center of the film, and a deep friendship, though one of the characters in the friendship is dead. The thing that all three of those types of relationships have in common is that they are the most intimate kinds of relationships you can have. A father-son relationship, a relationship between closely bonded lovers, a relationship between absolute sworn enemies. The characteristics of these relationships are very different than the kinds of relationships that you have between the members of the team. The members of the team are individuals who, in coming together, create a whole that is greater than the sum of its parts. Those closely bonded relationships, those are people that need each other to live. There is a sense in which if one of them died, the other would have a life without meaning. Whether it's if the good guy triumphs over the bad guy to the point where he can get rid of him, the good guy's life would actually be worse than if the bad guy survived and continued. Same with the father-son relationship, same with the closely bonded lovers, same with the brothers. And the interplay between those extremely intimate fusion-type relationships and the extremely utilitarian camaraderie of the team members, the interplay of those two kinds of relationships are another one of the things that bring that sense of delight and ever-shifting complexity to a caper film. And of course, finally, you need a MacGuffin. For a caper story to be a caper worth its salt, you need a MacGuffin. Whether that MacGuffin is the man in the bowler hat painting from the Thomas Crown Affair or Lady Holiday's baseball diamond from the Great Muppet Caper, you need a MacGuffin that drives the action that is ultimately completely meaningless. Part of the fun of the caper film is that you find out how meaningless the MacGuffin really is. Most of the time, when you've got a MacGuffin, everyone keeps pretending that it's meaningful all the way through to the end. But in a caper film, this is a weird thing that it's got in common sometimes with film noir, with the darkest, most depressing, blackest sorts of mysteries like The Maltese Falcon. The MacGuffin is literally meaningless. It's the rug that tied the room together. Nobody needs it. Nobody really cares about it in the end. The only thing it was a proxy for the relationships to take place. Even if it's got intrinsic value, like it's got a lot of money. You're like it's a boatload of gold, or there's a lot of money in the safe. Or a boatload of cars, like in Gone in 60 Seconds. Or Lady Holiday's baseball diamond at the Mallory Gallery. God, I love that film. All of these things, everybody's willing to put their lives on the line to get them. But in the end, at best, having it is kind of nice. Frequently, at the end of the heist, there is no theft. Not always. Sometimes there is. But frequently, there is no real theft that goes on. Either the merchandise gets returned, or the heist fails on the obvious level and there's some secondary payoff that comes because you're nailing the bad guy out of it or because you're securing the relationship, the close relationship at the center of the story. But one of the things that preserves the spirit of fun is that the MacGuffin is completely meaningless. So those are some of the really important elements of a caper story. What people come to capers for is the sense of fun, the mischief. And you secure that mischief by creating a world that has all the things that we care most about focused on something we care nothing about. But that gives an organizing principle to all the things that we all care most about to allow us to play with them in a way that's non-threatening, even though it might be a little dangerous. Caper films are backyard fireworks. They're not heavy-duty drama. They're intended to be playtime with the neighborhood club. You're playing war in the backyard. You're throwing rotten fruit at each other. You're infiltrating one another's clubhouses. Everyone knows it doesn't mean anything, but everyone's willing to spend a whole summer doing it because it's fun. Thanks very much for the question, and I'll see you tomorrow. The Everyday Novelist is written and presented by J. Daniel Sawyer and is produced by Artistic Whispers Productions, Incorporated. The text is copyright 2018 by J. Daniel Sawyer, and the production is copyright 2018 Artistic Whispers Productions.
This podcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives License, and all other rights are reserved to their respective owners.